Welcome to a very special afternoon concert. I have a studio full of conductors and the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival guest artist conductor Robert Franz this year has brought in all three of his students. And so I'm as excited as ever and then some, Robert. Thank you for coming back.
Well, you know, Lori, what's better than one conductors? Four conductors.
I know. I like to talk with my hands, so I kind of expect maybe everyone else might be knocking some microphones a little bit, so don't mind us.
Yes, absolutely. A little gesticulating going on over on the side of the table.
Well, Robert, you are here for the 2018 Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival, and we have been doing this co-hosting of Afternoon Concert for several years now, and it's been really wonderful to get that background and that notion of what's going on with these classical pieces. And it's really exciting that you've brought along three of your masterclass conductors with you this year.
So the festival is really interesting because it's really multiple festivals in one. So for our community, they'll notice that, you know, we do these large orchestra concerts, festival orchestra concerts. We have guest artists and the students, the registrants playing side by side. Last night we did a Pops concert at the Westmark Hotel. Tomorrow night, our big end of the year concert is in Davis Hall, performing Beethoven Symphony No. 3, actually. So that's...
And remember that. That may be a trivia question to win tickets to that concert for tomorrow night. So remember, what was the... What will you be playing tomorrow?
Symphony No. 3.
Ludwig van
Beethoven's Symphony No. 3, yes. In addition to all of that that the community sees in the public concerts that we do, Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival is very much a training arts festival. So we bring students from not only throughout Alaska, but actually the lower 48 and beyond to come here and study. In fact, we have two Mexican violinists, young Mexican violinists up here with us this year. And so we've really – it's all people from all over the world. So one component of it is that during week one of the two-week festival – I bring in four conducting fellows, three of which are here for week two with me in the studio today. But I bring in four, and we spend our whole week developing the art of conducting within each one of these students. You know, learning to be a conductor is really kind of a complicated process. First of all, there's the technical side, right? You have to know what to do with your hands and when to do it. And there's that sort of the shapes of your hands and the directions that they move to mirror the music.
And if you're just tuning in to Afternoon Concert for the first time, you know, classical music, a symphony, orchestra is almost never playing without that conductor.
That's right. That's right. So the conductor's role is, well, and so here's where it gets sort of funny, is that the conductor's role is, you know, you would think historically that the conductor's role is to just go in and tell everybody what to do and they do it, but it doesn't really work like that. The conductor is really like a coach, like the coach of a basketball team or a football team. Yeah. And my job as the conductor, or our jobs as the conductor, is to motivate the musicians in front of us to play at their very best, to create an environment in which they can excel. Sometimes that means inspiring the musicians. Sometimes it means challenging the musicians. Sometimes it means just being, you know, really loving and caring. I mean, there's so many aspects of it. So what we do in this particular conducting workshop is that we not only focus on what the hands should be doing, what direction they should move in, but we look really intensely at the why we're doing what it is that we're doing. Because as a conductor, the first step is the language of the music, is what is the composer trying to say? Then the second step is, are we using our hands and our gesticulations to describe and to evoke this music? And then thirdly, do we have the mental state of mind to convince these incredible musicians in front of us to come in the same direction? And so that process, A, is pretty darn complex on a good day, and B, to teach it and to learn it really takes years of experience and experiments and really sort of trying to sort of figure out how to juggle all of those elements.
Maestro Robert Franz, when I go to the symphony and when the audience is there, we see that culmination of that coaching and of that mentoring and what goes on with the conductor and the symphony all orchestrated in this program.
Yes.
But there is so much time that goes into, I'm sure, away from that symphony also of studying the music and wrapping your head around how to do this.
So what people see when they come to a concert really is the tip of the iceberg, and that's yes. not an exaggeration in the least. So, for instance, the hour-long symphony, well, it's 45-minute long symphony, Beethoven's Symphony No. 3 that I'll be conducting tomorrow night with the Festival Orchestra. Mm-hmm. I learned for the first time probably 20 years ago, I would guess. And at that time, I probably spent, not to exaggerate, probably 15 or 20 hours studying the score. So that's a good amount of time. Since then, I've conducted it another half dozen, eight times. And each time I've spent a few hours getting it back in my hands and in my mind and figuring it out. And then, of course, all of the rehearsal time that was spent with each of those occasions where I conducted it. And each time – so here's the thing about conducting. You can sit in your room with a recording in front of a mirror and you can wave your arms around all you want. But you actually don't learn how to be a conductor until you're standing in front of an orchestra. And the clock is ticking, right? You have a 2.5 hour rehearsal time, and that's not like 2.5 hours-ish. This is not Italy where 4 hours is 2.5 hours. Here, it's like in America, it's really 2.5 hours. And so when that clock stops, you're done. So in 2.5 hours, you have to accomplish what it is you set out to do, which is to prepare the orchestra, right? And so you have to do it in the most efficient and effective way possible.
And so you are here teaching these students
yes.
how to use that time
absolutely
wisely. And
that's the process.
Now,
here's
amazing.
The thing. All of the students who come to the conducting program are not beginners. None of them are beginners. So that's the first thing. Because the very beginning phases of this is even more sort of technical and challenging. What these students have done is they're out in the world conducting their orchestras, whether it be a professional orchestra, an amateur orchestra, youth orchestra, high school orchestra. They're doing their conducting work on a regular basis, and they come up here because they want to delve deeper into the art of conducting and discover more for themselves. What's possible in being a conductor. And so that's really what we're exploring. So for me, that's even more exciting because I'm working with incredibly motivated, incredibly talented musicians who have a clear idea of what they want to accomplish as a conductor. And my job is to sort of peel away any of the habits that have come in and find in underneath a new way of thinking about it and a clearer way of thinking about it so that their innate musicality is even more potent and even more connected to the process.
Well, let's jump right in with one of your students. We have Dominique Royam. Thank you.
Yeah.
Was just introduced to all of you right before afternoon concert today. And Dominique, you are one of Maestro Franz's students. And how long have you been conducting and what kind of orchestra are you working with these days?
Gosh, I've been conducting for about 15 years. Currently, I'm the music director of the Fort Bend Symphony Orchestra, which is right outside of Houston. I'm the newly appointed music director of the Mobile Symphony Youth Orchestra in Mobile, Alabama, and the director of orchestras at the University of South Alabama.
And
in her free time.
Right? You look so young and vibrant to be up that many hours during a day.
Oh, thank you.
And so you said you have been conducting for 15 years now. Is that what you said?
Wow. Yes.
And is this the first year you have come to Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival to do this masterclass, or are you a returning masterclass?
This is my first year up here, and I'm very excited to be here. It's a secret and very intense process up here, so it's unlike anything else out there.
And what is it that this culminates into? Do you conduct an orchestra this weekend?
Well, we already did our two performances.
Okay.
We have two performances during the first week as we study the rep that we have. And we've done both of them.
How did yours go?
It went very well.
Oh, excellent. Robert.
So there's in the center of the Festival Orchestra that the audience will hear this weekend playing Beethoven's Symphony No. 3.
Uh-huh. That will be a trivia question to win tickets to tomorrow night's concert at Davis Concert Hall.
There are it's two components: guest artists and students. So the guest artists during week one make up a chamber orchestra that these conducting students conduct in two separate concerts. So they have two full programs that they split between them. So it's 25% of each of the two programs that they conduct. So, you know, there aren't many conducting workshops anywhere, much less in the United States, where you get to conduct that much on the podium with a professional orchestra. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is the other component is 10 of those students actually play a concerto movement with the chamber orchestra. So they get to not only play a concerto movement, but these conductors get to also experiment and explore the art of being a conductor for concertos as opposed to symphonic pieces, which they did both last week. But both concerts were last week. And then the conductors have the opportunity to stay on the second week, and we continue with lessons and masterclasses. And then they all played percussion last night in the Pops concert, which was hysterical. And
Dominique, what did you play?
I played the crash cymbal, and I did it inaccurately.
Oh, that's okay. That's
A for effort, though, Dominique.
You did it as a human would, right?
Yes, very authoritatively, but wrong.
Did your conductor, Maestro Franz, look at you sideways?
Oh, yes, and he gave me the hand.
Oh, good. And you know what the hand means because you've been learning this.
Yes, absolutely. I have given people the hand as well.
Great.
So I knew exactly what it was.
Well, you learned it from the best, and we're the receiving end of the hand.
Yes.
Not quite. That was a pleasant, not quite yet. We're not quite there yet. But we'll be there soon. Hold on.
And it wasn't just in practice. It was in the full-on concert. That's so fun. And
oh, yeah.
I love that we can laugh about it and, you know, learn from our happy little mistakes, as Bob Ross would say.
I will tell you, there's a little secret people ask me all the time. They're like, do people ever make mistakes on stage? Right? And the answer is always, absolutely not. We never make mistakes. The truth is we always make mistakes.
Yeah.
The difference between a professional and a student mistake is how long it takes to recover.
Of course.
Oh, right?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Dominique recovered mighty quickly, I have to say. She was all about the recovery process.
That's wonderful. Dominique, you did conduct the Benjamin Britten Simple Symphony.
Yes.
And is this something that is a first time conducting for you, a piece, or have you done this in the past and you were just honing your skills on this with Maestro Franz?
It was new for me,
okay,
for this festival.
What drew you to this Simple Symphony by Britten?
Well, it's actually a reworking of a bunch of melodies that Britten wrote as a young child.
As a preteen, I know.
Yes, between the ages of 10 and 13.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely wasn't doing that when I was 13.
I was being dragged to the symphony and then being absorbed in it. But every time, I think at first, I was being dragged to the Wichita Symphony Orchestra with my parents. But we had very close seats, so we could watch the conductor very closely. So, no, I was not composing, nor, you say, were you?
Yeah, no, I definitely wasn't. I was stuck in rehearsal most of the time.
So that's where you got your start, in youth symphony orchestra.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Gotcha. And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Chicago.
Okay. Sorry. And what did you play in the symphony?
The cello.
Okay. And so do the cello section get a certain attention from you now, or even the brass gets as much attention and the percussion?
Well, even the brass gets as much attention, but I get along with the cellos after rehearsal.
She speaks their language.
Yes,
indeed.
Dry martini, shaken, never stirred.
Never stirred, shaken. Well, the Simple Symphony, speaking of brass, does not have any of that in it, correct?
No, it's just a string orchestra.
Yeah.
And it can be played by a string quintet up to a full string orchestra. We had a full string orchestra here in Fairbanks.
Oh, wonderful. And what was it like to be in front of a professional orchestra this time. Not that you haven't been conducting a professional orchestra right outside of Houston, but here it's the guest artists that are part of the orchestra, and we bring in folks that
really
culminate.
Incredible musicians. Yeah.
Yes.
They were incredible and very giving. And so it's wonderful to have very wonderful musicians that are also very giving when you're going through a learning process, because there were many times I stepped onto that podium and I wasn't as refined as I usually am on the podium. So it was nice to be able to be really open and honest with them.
Because you weren't in your home stadium, so to speak, or
that's
in your
correct,
home venue, so to speak. Yeah, or
well,
on
also
your home podium.
It's challenging having a conducting teacher in the room, right? Because you have someone who's saying, why are you doing that? Or maybe you should try this a different way. And so you fight your own natural instincts and you're trying to go over to the other side to sort of try something. And it puts you off your game just slightly. It's not easy being a student.
I can imagine, yes.
And Robert stares at you.
Like any good guest artist masterclass teacher would.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is why I am here. However, it is a little intimidating.
Well, the funny thing is I can't see her when my eyes are closed. So
you can hear the music, but you cannot see what you're supposed to see.
So I was less helpful when my eyes were closed.
Well, Dominique, let's get into some music. Can you introduce, and are we going to listen to the entire four movements here?
Well, I focused on the third and the fourth movement in my concert.
So shall we listen to those two?
Sure.
Okay. Why don't you introduce, as you would to, you know, our listeners or to the audience, or what your process was in approaching this?
Well, the third movement is called The Sentimental Sarabande. It's based on a theme from his suite number 3 in F minor for piano, which he wrote when he was 12.
Amazing, that little Benjamin Britten.
Absolutely amazing. And it is definitely sentimental. It was an experience in carrying my energy through a truly romantic theme that's passed around the orchestra. So.
And the last movement?
And the last movement is the frolicsome finale.
Frolic?
Yes.
Frolicsome. Oh, she frolicked. Let me tell you, this girl can frolic.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was based on the piano sonata number 9, which he wrote when he was 13. And it goes extremely fast. So we just kind of hang on to our instruments and just fly right through it.
Well, we'll see if Hartmut Henschen took it as fast as you did.
Well, we'll see.
We're going to listen to the third and fourth movement of the Simple Symphony, written by Benjamin Britten when he was just a preteen. And Dominique, you conducted this just last week right here in Fairbanks.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you for tuning in to KUAC's Afternoon Concert. We're featuring masterclass students from the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival. Robert Franz is my guest with his students. Thank you. Couple of false endings there at the end of the Simple Symphony. You are tuned to KUAC's Afternoon Concert. Today's program is centered around the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival Conductors Masterclass Conductors. And Dominique, you are here with us for the first part because you conducted the Simple Symphony by Benjamin Britten. Was it simple to work up?
No, it's very deceptively named. It's called Simple Symphony because of all the melodies that he used from his childhood, but it is not simple at all.
When that fourth movement, the one called Frolic, I think, when that started, my eyes got really big and I looked at you and I said, that is very, very tricky.
It is. The opening is very tricky and it scared me a bit when I was conducting it.
Well, because there are these things called
fermatas.
Robert things. Franz, Maestro Franz, what is a fermata?
So fermata literally means hold. And so composers will often put, if they want a note held, they'll put a fermata over it, or bird's eye. Some people call it bird's eye, but it's a fermata.
Okay. Yeah.
And then sometimes they'll put them over the rest. And that's what Benjamin Britten did here. He put them over the rest so that it's an indeterminate amount of time. So hold. Da 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 di da 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 di da da hold. Da 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 di da di da 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 di da da is how it works, right? And so getting in and out of those is tricky technically.
So it's up to the conductor to decide how long that hold is going to be.
Dominique was definitely in charge.
And
that's the point.
Well, yeah, that is the point of. Is that what made you want to be a conductor to, decide on how long we're going to hold that note or hold that pause?
Yeah, well, you know, and when you're holding a fermata, you're standing there perfectly still and trying not to move a muscle. Because once you start moving a muscle or even a little tick, someone will start playing.
Yes, because they are trained to start playing as you move.
Yes, absolutely. And so when there's nothing going on, you cannot move at all.
So, but don't hold your breath because that leads to passing out.
Well, you kind of have to hold your breath because if you take a breath, they're going to think you're going to start moving.
There is so much body language that goes into being a conductor, including even, like you say, taking a breath. Inhaling means let's go.
Absolutely. Every single movement of your body, from your face down to your toes, is scrutinized by all these musicians. And so it all has to be part of the artistic process.
And you can have they to... all even see your toes? I bet they can.
Some people will be watching your toes, yes.
First violinist, maybe.
Yes. Especially if you stick your foot out or do something funny like that. Yeah, everything has a meaning.
And that's part of the things, that's all incorporating what you are learning these 2 weeks here during the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival, being part of that master class from Robert Franz. And you're learning really from one of the best of the best.
Absolutely. It's why I came all the way here.
You came all the way up from Texas to Fairbanks to learn more about conducting, because you're already conducting, but we are always learning as humans to, you know, hone our craft.
Absolutely. As an artist, you have to grow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, congratulations, Dominique. I bet that was really thrilling to be in front of that professional chamber orchestra conducting Britten's Simple Symphony. Congratulations.
It was. Thank you.
Nice. Well, we move on to another student conductor. We have Ian Henscheid here. And thanks for joining us, Ian.
Thank you for having me.
And it is my understanding that you played under the baton of Maestro Franz when you were younger.
Yes. Yeah. We actually met when I started in the music department at BSU, or Boise State University, down in Boise.
Yeah. Because, Robert, are you still at Boise?
I lived there, but I was music director of the Boise Philharmonic from 2008 to 2016.
Yeah.
Yeah. So during that time, we overlapped a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And Ian, is it a selection process that you can't just sign up? It's not like a normal Fairbanks summer, Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival workshop where you just sign up. Were you selected for this?
I like to think I was.
you were.
Robert Franz, I work over at Centennial High School in Boise. I'm the orchestra director there. And he comes by once a year, maybe twice a year if I'm really lucky. And he'll come by and work with my groups. And so he and I got to sit down after he worked with my top group, my chamber orchestra there. And we got to talk, and I kind of let him know that I was very interested in this conducting path. So after that, he basically invited me and told me that if you're really interested in this, join us at Fairbanks and I'll get you going. And he certainly has.
Right? Because even conducting a high school orchestra, you could be inspiring some of these students of yours to become conductors someday or to move on to play in a professional symphony.
Yeah. Yeah, I've actually had, I've been there for 2 years and I've had, I think about 6 of my seniors over the 2 years that have gone into music to do performance, education, something along that composition. And that's 6 may sound like a small number, but it's a huge number when you're, you know, I have 6 of your kids from your program where you only have 10 seniors graduating out of there going into music.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Wow. That's way over half. That's great.
Yeah.
So how did you pick the Janáček Idyll for Strings?
I wish I picked it, but I was just lucky enough to get it bestowed upon me. It's funny, I was actually looking at this piece a year ago. I was thinking about purchasing it for my chamber group to play because I had stumbled across it. We had played his other piece that he has for strings, his Suite for Strings, and it's a beautiful piece. And so I came across this, and I loved it. So I was really happy to see it was on the program.
The Idyll for Strings by Janáček is just as beautiful as the Suite for Strings, and it's just really creates this emotion, and it's a gorgeous piece of folk melodies interwoven into this classical piece.
Yeah, it really is. And I was just informed that Dvorak and Smetana were at the premiere of this.
Wow.
When it was first premiered. So,
in the mid-1800s, probably.
Late 1800s.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. That's very, that says a lot about Janáček that he, you know, got other composers of his mentors, most likely, to come and see the premiere.
Right.
Well, Robert, how was watching the Idyll for Strings being conducted by your student Ian the other night in front of an audience?
You know what? Ian really did an amazing job. Ian is he is sort of towards the beginning of the process of becoming a growing to be a professional conductor. And so he is.
Listeners, Ian looks rather young. I mean, I have to say,
he's 53.
He is.
Yes, he's 3 years my senior.
He found the fountain of youth.
Yeah. And so this was So, and this was our first time working together as conductor to conductor. I mean, he's played for me before, but not in this way. And so it was a really interesting process because the way that I think about, and this is true of all conductors, I'm not special in this, the way that I think about conducting and music is my own, right? That's how you develop, is you develop your own sense of like, well, how. So the first couple of days, I was just sort of indoctrinating Ian in the sort of the ways of how Robert thinks. And it was really kind of fun to watch him sort of like be, oh, well, that's interesting. And, oh, I never thought that, because he's played with me. So, yeah. But he's never really, we've never had a conversation about what it is that I do to sort of create that circle, right? So we create that circle together, right? And so.
Oh, interesting, because he's played in an orchestra you've been conducting.
Correct.
And so he's gotten that coaching that.
He's seen the activity,
yes.
But he didn't know this theory behind it or
right.
The concepts behind
exactly.
it.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And so as I started to describe it, like light bulbs were going off, right? Which was really, it was really awesome to see. And then we got into the nitty gritty of his two movements, the third and fourth movement that we're going to hear here in just a second. And there are a lot of challenges. There are a lot of conducting challenges. To
like
these two movements. Well, the third movement, for instance, is in five. Maybe we could even just talk about that first. That like the beat pattern he used for five was different than how I conceive it. So,
Ian, what does that mean? It's in five.
So you know, you have your typical. I think a lot of us are used to hearing common time, 4/4 time. So you have four beats in a measure. And that's like your
one,
typical
two, three, four,
one, two, three. Yeah, we musicians, we back out, we back double back on ourselves all the time. One, two, one, two, one, two. And then every once we get excited. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And this was in five.
So how would you count that in
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And typically you find that a bar is divided into 3+2 or 2+3. So you get some strong beats in the bar.
Okay.
And this one, I think you'll be able to hear the start of it starts off 3+2. So you have a nice da-dum-dum, dum-dum. So you have two soft notes there at the end, and it's divided up that way. And Janacek's super clever. He has this really dark, beautiful melody that we start off with in the 5/4. He moves it into con moto, so that means with motion, and we go into 3/4. And so it's a little bit of a switch, but he actually just sneaks like one extra note into this little 5/4 motive and ties this melody over six beats now instead of five. It's really clever and really nice to listen to. So it's when we were working on this, actually, Robert had me conduct in one straight line, totally odd, like you never would conduct like this, but just one straight line of six beats, and it's this really smooth line. But really to kind of create this melodic line. And so it was just six beats to the right, six beats to the left. And I think if you're listening to this, you might be able to pick up on that. And then at the end, he switches it back to 5/4, and he kind of ends how he starts and slows it down. And he does a little funny thing where he makes it 2+3 at the end.
Because it was 3+2 at
the beginning. Yeah.
So... for musicians, I'm sure they're going to understand the 3/4 and the 4/4, but the top number stands for what and the bottom number stands for what?
Well, Ian? Yeah, as a music teacher.
we need some instruction here from the high school orchestra director. You called yourself a teacher now.
I did. And I did guitar, so I had my music, my orchestra kids know this stuff, but my guitar kids, they were just... totally unsure of what any of this meant. So I just tell them the top number always tells you how many beats you're going to have in a measure. So that's how many times or how much you count, right? Mm-hmm. So you count to three or you count to four. The bottom number gets a little more confusing. It tells you which note will get the beat. So if you have a steady pulse going, you're going to know which note gets the beat. I taught them a little trick. You stick a one over it and then you get a fraction. Whatever fraction that is will give you the number. So if you have a four at the bottom, you get a quarter note.
Oh, gotcha.
You have a two at the bottom, you get half note will get the beat.
See how good he is at that?
See?
Yes.
Did you see the light bulb above
it was, I put my sunglasses on.
Yeah.
It was so bright.
And I have read music in choir before, but it's been a while. And I've read music as a piano student. It's just been a while.
Yeah.
So
it's like riding a bike once you learn. Never forget.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you asked me what I played earlier, and I was a piano student for a while, and, you know, it's hard to take a piano with you, so
now,
I left it behind.
The, The other movement that I chose for him was the fourth movement, and it had the exact opposite challenges. So the third movement, which he mentioned in five and then four and then five again, five and then three and then five, is slow and very expressive and requires in your hand a lot of horizontal motion that sort of evokes this idea of a singing quality. I mean, you don't sing going up and down. You sing, you know, with the airstream sort of moving in a line. So that's the kind of shape that he was trying to create with his 5-4 measures.
And I think of a bow on strings being in a line.
You are so right. And that's exactly right. And so, and especially because Ian's a violist, so that he can really connect with using, you know, his right arm in a bow, in the way that you would move a bow. This fourth movement is like a march. One, two. One, two. And it's very vertical in terms of the music. It's more about the rhythm than it is about the song, the singing quality. And surprisingly enough, how to start a movement, especially that movement, was the most difficult thing. And I think, Ian, we probably spent the most time just getting that movement started.
Yeah. So how did you wrap your head around that? What was the light bulb moment there?
It's kind of this, it's kind of been my mantra for this whole trip so far, is kind of really anticipating and thinking ahead in the music. And so and letting that music that's on the page inform how you're making these motions for the orchestra to follow. And so just kind of have to really think about how you want this music to go, and you need to show that right away. So before
being part of an orchestra is very different than conducting an orchestra.
Yes. There are definitely two sides to that.
Different,
it's that coin,
way,
but yeah.
Of thinking about the music on the page.
Yes. Yeah. And it's just, you have to be that translator for the music to the group. And Robert and I have spent a lot of time talking about that.
Well, and what Ian mentioned, and I think is really important, is that the musician plays at the time, because they're actually making the sound. If the conductor moves at the exact same time that the musician plays, then it's too late. So the conductor has to learn how to anticipate, be in the moment, and look ahead at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm. Like Dominique was saying just a little while ago, during that pause, you cannot move, because if you move, they will start playing right a split second or less after you move. And so, that's a...
Right.
You have to anticipate those things.
That's exactly right. And anticipate not only the speed of the beat or the pulse, but also the style of the music, the sound of the music that you want. I mean, there's so many aspects of it, and there's so many slight alterations that you can make in your body that will elicit or evoke different kinds of sounds. And Ian did a particularly brilliant job with this movement, I have to say, at grabbing the changes soon enough to really affect change in the orchestra. And you could hear it in the performance. And the difference between his first rehearsal and the performance was enormous, as he sort of grappled with that and came to grips with that process of preparing.
And Ian, how many practices did you have before the performance in front of the audience with your chamber orchestra?
Let's see. We had a chance to kind of do this in front of a pianist that kind of did it on piano. So we got a nice little practice there. But then I think we only had two rehearsals with this group. But they are so good about responding to exactly what you're doing. And it was such a wonderful treat to work with such kind individuals and really talented musicians.
And how interesting for them too to be a part of this teaching. They get to watch Maestro Franz teaching you as a masterclass student, Ian, and how, you know, he's trying to get you to get them to do what is needed.
Yeah, it's been quite a trip.
It is definitely like having tin cans tied to a string as we try to communicate with each other.
Yes.
make it around the room. But it's interesting you say that, because I think for the musicians in the orchestra, even they think about conducting differently after sitting in a week of conducting lessons
that,
because they're like, oh, wow, when he did move differently or something changed, it was easier to play, but they hadn't really thought about before why it was easy or hard or difficult to do something.
How cool. Well, introduce the Idyll for Strings, the movements you're going to share with us here. It's, let's see, I think...
Movements 3 and 4.
Movements 3 and 4, yeah.
Yeah, so Movement 3 is starts off, I think it's moderato. So it's very, like I said earlier, it has this really nice melodic line. It's tied across all these bars, and it's a really long phrase, really smooth and dark sound, and he tosses that little playful con moto in the middle of it. And then we get to the fourth movement, Allegro, and it's quite interesting how Robert said, yes, like a march, but it's very, he, again, it has all these character changes that as long as you're listening, you'll really pick up on these very subtle and then sometimes really jarring character changes that are just tossed into the middle of this, and it makes for a really invigorating fourth movement.
Well, we're going to let Gregory Rose and the Jupiter Orchestra take us there with Janáček's Idol Suite for this is the Idol Suite for Idol for Strings. The Suite for Strings is different. That's yeah, got it. Here on KUAC's Afternoon Concert.
Thank you.
Janáček's Idyll for Strings. And Ian, does that take you back to the other night when you were on stage and conducting that piece in front of your mentor, Robert Franz, Maestro Franz?
Yeah, it does. It was such a great opportunity, and I just had fun doing that.
You are a high school in Boise. You are a high school orchestra director. And so will you be taking this Janáček piece back to your high school orchestra?
I'll be considering doing something like this next year. And I will definitely be taking all these new techniques and just preparations and how I look at my pieces. I'll be taking all of that back. Yeah.
What are some of the things you've learned in these past 2 weeks that are really feeling like you're going to connect with these young teenagers that are playing strings and brass and woodwind and percussion in your orchestras?
I think the biggest thing for me is really, one, how I'm looking at the piece of music, and then being, like I said earlier, that translator and really closely examining how I'm showing that music. And then secondly, I really want my students to take from that and really kind of open up not only their eyes, but just their like musical mind as to like how they need to watch and what it really means to be watching a conductor, especially like my top group. You know, they know that they don't need a beat pattern in front of them. That's not what that's all about. They're smart enough. They can keep the pulse. So just kind of all like the extended stuff I've learned here, I think would be really nice to help younger musicians kind of start being aware of.
I get the feeling that those juniors last year who are seniors this year are going to notice a difference and there's going to be a spark there that they're going to notice.
We are hoping so. Yeah.
Well, Ian Henshad.
Yeah. Henshad.
All right, great. It's really wonderful to have you here all the way up from Boise, Idaho, as part of the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival. And will you be playing in the orchestra concert tomorrow?
Yes, on viola. I got to play in the pops last night on viola, and I'll be doing some more of it tomorrow.
You didn't get the hand last night, did you?
No.
Just the percussion.
No, I fixed fixed my mistakes. I got the hand in rehearsal plenty.
Nice. Yes, I guess the hand is the crossing guard style of weight.
I don't actually use that hand that often.
I don't know.
They're just a little overdramatic, these three.
As any good conductor can be. Oh, wow. We are to our third masterclass conductor, Daniel Wiley. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
And is this your first time here in Fairbanks as part of the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival?
No, actually. What year is this for me?
This is your fifth year, I think.
Oh, gosh, it's my fifth year. Time has flown by.
Wow.
So I have been up here for 5 years working with Robert, and it's been, I mean, it's been life-changing. I love it up here. I love this process. I love the orchestra. It's just a ton of fun, and a lot of growth happens in these 2 weeks.
Well, speaking of life-changing, since you've been working with Robert so much, you are – Robert Franz, Maestro Franz, is the executive
– Music director.
Music director of the Windsor Symphony Orchestra.
Correct.
And Daniel Wiley, you've been chosen as the assistant conductor. Is
correct.
That correct?
That is correct.
Of the Windsor Symphony Orchestra.
Of the Windsor Symphony, yes. And it's just like – my first job, and I'm so excited for it. And, you know, especially to, you know, I grew up in Southern California, and I never thought that, you know, my first job would take me to Canada.
So that is exciting.
It's exciting. Yeah.
I mean, because the arts are still alive and well here in America. We do know that. And so you can take that spirit to Canada.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes.
Well, what is it that you are conducting or that you conducted last week for your masterclass performance?
Right. So I focused on Haydn Symphony number 83, titled The Hen or The Chicken, depending on who you ask, apparently. and it's part of his he's got a set of six symphonies that are we call his Paris symphonies.
Yeah.
That were commissioned obviously a rich patron, but this rich patron was actually a cellist in the orchestra that played. So, you know, can you imagine that? You know, you're writing a piece, and by the way, when you look to your right, the person you're writing it for, you know, maybe you give them a good cello part or something.
Mm-hmm. You should probably. Are there some good cello parts?
I think there's some fun cello
the
parts.
Hen?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And my understanding of these Paris symphonies that Haydn wrote, those are like the late 70s, 879 through something or other.
Yeah, 80 somewhere
something.
In that range, yes.
Yeah. Wow, Haydn wrote a lot of symphonies.
He
I
did.
Mean, he got into the hundreds even.
Yes.
Yeah. They called for many, many, many strings even, up to 40 violins and 10 contrabasses? Is that, yeah. Have you read that anywhere?
I mean, I've seen that, yeah. And that's just a massive force. I mean, especially 10 contrabasses. I mean, that's a lot of rumbling happening back there for sure.
It is a lot of rumbling. The contrabass is the large stand-up bass that's either, you know, plucked or with the bow.
This was actually in Paris. It was an orchestra that Marie Antoinette was the patron of. And she wanted it to be grander and grander and grander. And of course... Of course, they had cake at the intermission, I hear. But anyway.
Let them eat cake.
Yes. But it, so it was an orchestra of like 60 or 70 or 80 musicians, which today is sort of a normal full symphony orchestra. Then it was completely unheard of. There was no orchestra that size. So when Haydn was commissioned to write six new symphonies for this large orchestra, it was kind of the thrill of the day. I mean, you had to be like the top composition person to get a commission like that and to get to do this, and then to go hear your piece played by 20 first violins and 20 second violins. By the way, they also wore blue tuxedos with big ruffles, and they all had bayonets in there. So they all sat on stage.
That.
Yeah, I mean, it was really like, it was over the top Marie Antoinette at her like finest drama queen.
Everybody in sky blue.
That's exactly
everyone
right.
Everyone with swords and bayonets.
That's right. And which makes this piece even funnier since it's nicknamed after a chicken or a hen, as some would say. And you actually hear the pecking of the chicken in the middle of the first movement, which I think is really funny when you think about a bunch of guys in blue tuxedos and ruffles and bayonets playing a piece about a chicken. I mean, like, nothing about that whole picture sounds right to me. That's where we are. So that's that's what we brought here to Fairbanks is the chicken symphony.
The chicken.
Yeah.
What drew you to this piece, Daniel?
Well,
other than Robert other saying than, this is what you're going to conduct.
There we go. I was going to say it was bestowed upon me. But
I'm bestowed upon you as such.
But what I would say is that, you know, conducting Haydn, you know, especially because he is such – he's known for the symphony. And as conductors, that's, you know, sort of at a core of our repertoire here. I have to say that Haydn is really great about creating characters. I mean, obviously, you know, this title, The Hen or The Chicken, And so what we spent, I feel like what we spend a lot of our time working on is how can we really get to the core of that character and really bring that out, because it can be quite hysterical.
Because there's call and response in this symphony.
Right.
And there's
you know, there's points where he's dramatic, or, you know, there's a moment in the second movement that is sort of evocative of a chicken as well, where things just sort of stop and it's just sort of that, and everybody's sitting, well, what are we doing? Oh, right. Okay, we're kind of pecking here.
We're pecking around.
Yeah, exactly. But nothing else is, I mean, it's just like no emotion. It's just a chicken pecking.
But you know what's interesting is, so we had talked earlier about fermatas or holds, and sometimes they're over rests. Yeah. When your audience today hears this, they're going to hear quiet moments. Those do not have fermatas over it. So that is a very strict indication by Haydn that there's a prescribed amount of time of silence. It's not ish. It's not like a little longer, a little shorter. Every performance is always relatively the same in terms of the space.
And we know that because of the notes that Haydn wrote with his symphony, or how do we know that?
Right, correct. So it's like particularly you'll hear in this first movement, you know, he lays out something for you, and then, you know, if you had that like steady pulse going, you could click four beats and then the music comes back in. And so and what you see on the page is, as we described earlier, there's no fermata actually written on the page, or bird's eye, as some people call it. It's actually not there. So that's an indication for us that we need to stay in time and keep going.
Gotcha. Yeah. So four beats of
silence.
Silence is four beats of silence. It's not...
Correct.
You know,
right. But for us as performers, and especially us as conductors, it's important to make sure that that silence doesn't sag in energy. It's actually increases our energy, so that, you know, Haydn is sort of tongue in cheek with this. You know, you get silence and it's sort of, you know, you freeze. Okay, we'll go again. And then wait. Okay, we'll go again. Yeah. And he uses that to his advantage, I think.
You know, these days, a lot of people are keeping chickens in their backyard. Even during the Fairbanks North Scarborough Assembly meeting last night, there was a lot of talk of how many chickens, maybe how many roosters you could have in your backyard.
What is the final decision? Because in Boise, there's a limit. In our neighborhood, yes, the North End where I live, you can have a maximum of four. If you have five, you are an illegal chicken owner. If you have four or less, you are a legal chicken owner. And can I just tell you something? I do not enjoy the chickens at 5:30 in the morning. That is not a time I enjoy them. I enjoy them at 5:30 at night when I'm eating dinner, but not at 5:30 in the morning when I'm waking up.
This is the problem. They allowed too many roosters, Robert.
Right.
That's the thing. Just hens, you're fine. You know, Haydn had it right with the hen.
Well, but what is the limit here in Fairbanks? How many are you allowed to have?
I'm afraid that I had to go run an errand as they were naming numbers for goats and chickens.
We are building up the anticipation here, right here at KUAC. We're gonna, you know, this is it. How many? Stay tuned to find out.
You may have to listen to the local evening newscast at 5:45 to find out that final number.
Well, I want to know. Curious mind here.
Yes. I think one of my coworkers who is an assemblyman may walk past and give us a number here soon.
I'm dying to know. I'm fermatted right now while I'm waiting.
So, Daniel, you, I know that Ian said that he plays viola and Dominique plays violin.
Cello,
I mean. That's right. And Daniel, are you in the stringed instrument category?
No, I actually play the clarinet.
Ah. So how does that change your approach to the orchestra, or does it?
It does a little bit, because you think about an orchestra and what's the main instrument that you see are string players, right? People who use a bow and play on a string. And Robert has a funny joke, because Robert plays the oboe, and so we're both wind
players.
Oh, that's
right. I remember that. Yes.
And you know, whenever, you know, we have to determine which way the bow is going, you know, either this way or that way. So that we're all doing it the same way.
Up or down.
Up or down, right. And that's not a thing that wind players usually have to deal with, right?
Right.
And so our way around it, you know, when we suggest a bowing and we sort of get a scowl back like, I'm not sure what that is. Robert has a wonderful little cop out and says, well, that's an oboe bowing. So, but, you know, actually I have a bachelor's degree in music education. And so I spent quite a, quite a long time learning all of the instruments. So I feel quite comfortable with all of them. But I do have to say that, you know, after the Pops concert last night, I walked back to the clarinet section, my people, and, you know,
yes.
we nerded out about clarinet stuff.
So your background,
it's a thing.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
It's hard to imagine musicians nerding out about anything, really, isn't it?
No.
No,
actually. So your background is in musical education, which really makes sense that your life's dream may have been to be a conductor, was it?
Oh, you know, actually, it was interesting. In high school, I wanted to be a high school band director. I mean, that was my end goal. And yeah. I was like, if I get there, great. And then, you know, actually, it was in college when I first met Robert. And I thought, you know, I'm really interested in this field and this music and not only, you know, about – you know, how interesting the music is, but also how you can connect it to people's lives. And that was very, very, very profound for me.
Interesting that you say that, because so many symphony orchestras and community bands and chamber orchestras are made up of people that are living their lives outside of that, too. And so everybody's bringing in, you know, this sense of, I want to be a part of this, but I only have this much time for this. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you're bringing in people from all walks of life.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there are, in my world, we like to, in my family, we like to say there are two things that bring people together. It's food and art.
Yes. So. No, true.
And so, yeah, that's definitely what has drawn me here. It's just that, you know, that passion for making music, but also that, you know, we don't make music just for ourselves.
Yeah.
It's a communal thing. So,
and I do love listening to a great symphony while I bake. I think it makes a flakier pie crust. I think the yeast just does its job better.
Do you know what? If I listen to music while I bake, I totally mess up whatever it is that I'm making. So I'm listening to the music and I'm like, was that a pound of sugar or a teaspoon of sugar? Or was that a cup of oil? I can't remember.
I think the difference between you and I, Robert, is that I don't get so absorbed in the weeds of the beats and the fermatas and the 3-4 time, the 4-4.
Yes, it's true. It's true. It's a curse.
Blessing and a curse.
Yes.
Well, Danielissa introduced this piece that we're listening to, Movement 1 and 2 of Haydn's Symphony number 83. And Haydn did subtitle most of his symphonies, right? Or some of them?
Some of them, not all of them. Yeah.
Well, that would be hard to find a subtitle for all 100 and whatever.
Right.
Four.
104. Yeah. Right. Not 100 and whatever. It's 104.
Right. And then you'd have to decide, did he subtitle it or did someone else?
Sure.
That's a in the weeds conversation.
Except we don't think he ever subtitled any of them.
Right. I was wondering about that.
No, it's just somebody heard this symphony, said, you know what that sounds like? A chicken. Let's call it the hen.
And you'll hear it.
Yeah. Because calling it a chicken would be
a little passé. It wasn't as sophisticated as the hen, but I still think it's the chicken.
The founders of Chicken Alaska couldn't spell ptarmigan, so that's how it ended up being Chicken Alaska.
Well, and I used to live in Louisville, the home of Kentucky Fried Chicken.
There we go.
So I'm all about the chicken.
We know. We know. So let's point out a few things before we listen to this. And we've pointed out the pecking and the...
Sure, yeah. So I think the first thing that might strike you is that this actually starts off kind of stormy and tumultuous, and there's a lot of angst. And that silence that Robert was talking about, that's not a fermata, but it's actually in time. And he uses that throughout this entire symphony, either to create more drama or to actually create some humor. You know, sometimes he'll create this stormy section and then there'll be a pause and then you'll get something that's completely different. And it's absolutely hysterical when he does it because you're not expecting it. And he uses that silence that way. And for sure, you'll hear the pecking that goes on. And in your mind, it is sort of hard not to see it, you know, like a chicken running around and you know, picking up whatever. And the second movement is very quite beautiful. And there are moments where, you know, he's just got this high drama followed by nothing. We talked about that earlier. And he uses these, you know, these extremes right next to each other to sort of paint a point. And I think it's absolutely great. So
this is so enjoyable to be listening along and learning and having a conversation about this, these classical pieces with the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival Masterclass conductors. Robert Franz is here with us and his masterclass. And we are going to listen to Haydn's Symphony No. 83, Movement 1 and 2. And it's Antal Doradi conducting this one. We fade down on Haydn's Symphony No. 81 for you music aficionados like I have here in the KUAC studios. We'll know right away that piece had nothing resembling a chicken, but this next one will. These things happen in live radio. So, Daniel Wiley, will you please introduce this for a second time, because we're going to get it right this time.
Oh, so we are now on Haydn Symphony No. 83. In G minor. The first movement, it should be Allegro Spiritoso, and it's going to be super tumultuous. We've got a very sort of angsty beginning here. So followed by an andante, sort of a walking second movement, where he's going to use extremes to paint a point about drama and sort of nothingness. And in the nothingness, we'll find that chicken again.
So. All right. Take two. Thank you.
Thank you.
the first two movements of Haydn Symphony number 83, not 81, The Hen. And Daniel Wiley, what was one of the highlights of conducting that the other night on the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival stage?
Well, I guess it would be, I'd have to echo my my colleague's sentiments in working with an orchestra that is just so generous. It's not only, it not only creates a good environment to be vulnerable and learn, but also when you go to perform, they're there with you. And, you know, they really, really genuinely want to make music with you. And so I think the highlight for me was, you know, finding all of the different characters, but also connecting with them in that way and helping, you know, as a group bring that forward. That, and I had a blast. That was so much fun.
So much fun. If you're just joining us, I have the master class from the Fairbanks Symphony Arts, Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival, the conductors here with Robert Franz, and you have been teaching these folks these 2 weeks. Mm-hmm, these three students here in the studio have been with you for these 2 weeks. And Daniel has been returning every year for, what did you say, five years now?
Yes. Daniel actually started before we had an official conducting workshop. He came up just to sort of study with me one summer and kind of be an assistant and help out. And one thing grew into another, and eventually it became the workshop that it is today, which is a very intensive experience. You know, we spend, during the week one of the festival, we spend about 10 to 12 hours a day together, mm-hmm. Between master classes and rehearsals and lessons and just general conversation about what it means to be a conductor and what some of the challenges are and ways to think about music and life and how we bring those things together.
Yeah. And earlier, Ian, one of your other students that's here in the studio, mentioned that you practice with a pianist also, mm-hmm. and that's part of the conducting. So before you have the whole orchestra with you, because a whole orchestra getting together, that takes a lot of time and effort and such. So you have a pianist. What's that like?
Well, it's a little different because instead of trying to get, you know, 40 people to do the same thing at the same time, you just have one other person. So you reduce the variables. But it's also a way to just help us organize, start that organizational process and just check and make sure, okay, is this actually working? Can another human being actually read what you're trying to communicate to them visually? Before we get in front of an orchestra.
Well, and that gives you a little time to have Maestro Franz giving you some instruction. You don't have 40 people waiting on that instruction. You have that one person.
Right. And if I can echo what Robert said earlier, you know, it's really hard for us, you know, for when we're learning our instruments, generally speaking, the way that it works is, you know, you go to a private teacher and you sit behind a closed door and you guys work on it together. And if you make a mistake, your teacher is the only one that knows and corrects
right.
it. Our private lessons happen in front of a group of people.
Public.
Because
yes.
you're the conductor
right.
and you are in the spotlight there.
Correct. And so when you are up there trying to figure it out, everybody gets to see all of your mistakes. So it also helps take the pressure off of us a little bit when it's just a pianist.
Yes,
yeah.
I would agree. And coming up here for 5 years and taking an interest in studying under Maestro Robert Franz has really paid off. I mean, you are now the assistant conductor of the Windsor Symphony Orchestra, where you're executive director.
Mm-hmm. Yep, music director.
Music director.
Executive music director.
Another
title.
All of these titles
that's
correct.
My new title. I know, no, it's totally fine. But yes, I'm the conductor of the Windsor Symphony Orchestra.
Yes.
So Daniel came to us this year, and there was a committee it put together of musicians from the orchestra, and mm-hmm. they unanimously chose Daniel. I stayed out of it because I knew Daniel so well, and in fact, a number of students of mine in the past had applied and auditioned. So. You know, he really sort of proved himself not only as a qualified conductor, but able to handle the education, community outreach components of that job that are so vital to the success of not only his position, but to the success of our orchestra. You know, orchestras around the country, both the States and Canada, I mean, it's a very similar feel in many ways, spend a lot of time and energy making sure that we are building bridges and reaching out into the community in a real and vital and meaningful way to the community. And so we expend in Windsor, for instance, we do 100, 125 concerts a year, and about 60 to 70% of those are outside of our hall, our main stage concerts.
Oh, wow.
And about 60, 70% are concerts in schools and community centers, retirement homes, hospitals, public parks, places all over the city. And so that's a pretty typical way of being for orchestras as we make sure that we maintain and build classical music audiences for years to come.
In Windsor, do you do one of those pre-concert talks before the symphony orchestra plays
for
the audience?
That's going to be part of my job description. You know, I wear several hats.
Yeah.
I'm going to wear several hats there. One is, you know, being the assistant conductor, which means, you know, whenever Robert is there, I'm sort of the understudy, mm-hmm. learning all of the music just in case, you know, Robert falls ill or something mm-hmm. happens. I have to be ready to step in. The other large component, as he said, was the education outreach as well as the youth orchestra. There are two youth orchestras there that I will be taking up and leading, and that's going to be a lot of fun. So
that seems like a lot of fun. I took my lunch break and watched some YouTube videos, and one of them, Robert, was of you as the wolf from Little Red Riding Hood.
Doing my rap.
And you were doing a rap with...
You mean, once upon a time, there lived in the woods a boss little girl named Riding Hood. I don't mean blue. I don't mean green. I don't mean fuchsia or aquamarine. I say red. I say red. I say red. Little Red Riding Hood.
You had the audience absolutely with you that day.
Well, I have to say that the other three conductors stopped breathing there just for a moment. So that was kind of fun. I'll have to remember that in future need when I need to get their attention.
Excellent. He's like, going to launch
like if you don't pay attention to me, I will rap for you. That's how this is going down, let me just say.
And Ian, you might want to use that with your high school students too. So. And the youth orchestra, Daniel. Well, this is so exciting to be a part of today's afternoon concert with the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival Masterclass. It's a little bit different than the rest of the workshops for Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival, where you can sign up whether you're a beginner or an intermediate or really is delving deep into it. This, on the other hand, is different because
it's very different. And so first of all, I'm extraordinarily grateful to the staff and board of the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival for allowing me to set up this workshop. So that I'm very, very grateful to them. But a few years ago when we first started this, I put out announcements in a couple of the sort of conductor, international conductor magazines and websites. And I had over two dozen applicants apply for these four positions. And
wow.
So this has become a very popular workshop to do. So yeah. It's really the creme de la creme. This year, Ian was exactly right. So this year, instead of putting out applications, I actually had students from far and wide who approached me about coming. And so I chose four that I thought would not only work really well sort of as a team, but also that I felt like I could do something to help them, do something to help, you know, in their process, in their journey as they go. And so it's really been an enormous labor of love and a huge joy to see the four of these folks sort of open their awareness, open their hearts, open their minds to different ways of thinking about music and the art of conducting. And, you know, I tell them, I said, I call this the art of conducting on purpose, because this isn't just a conducting seminar, how to beat through time, but it's actually how to be an artist in your role as conductor and how to take that artistry and that sense of being and to share it and create an environment for others to share with you and be a part of that. And that's it's a complicated process. It's not an easy process. And they have all signed on to climb quite a tall mountain over these 2 weeks with me as we've sort of grown and sort of blossomed and explored through this process.
One of my fellow hosts of classical music, and he's been a host for many years here at KUAC, Music of the Golden Ages host and afternoon concert host, Bob Fisher, he loves watching conductors. Mm-hmm. Like he, you know, watches YouTube videos of conductors and just really has an appreciation for that art. And he called your skills the cat-like skills. And I was like, oh, you're so right. It's like Robert's about to pounce on that note. And I loved that description. You all see it, right, yeah. Daniel?
Yeah. I'll be leaving now. No.
You know, felines, they have quite the quality to them.
They're hyper aware. And, you know, these students can say anything they want, but they cannot say that I'm not hyper aware of what's going on around me at any given moment. Sometimes they wish I was a little less aware of what was actually happening in front of me.
They are the birds in your hyper awareness.
Teaching conducting is a really interesting process because, you know, it's not just saying like, okay, do this, do that, but it's actually watching them. Not only their hands move, but watching and trying to figure out what is their motivation? What's going on? What are they thinking? Like, how are they moving through this? What's happening? And it's, I only teach two weeks out of each year, conductors, full time.
That takes so much energy.
Oh, yeah. So on Sunday when I get home, I will probably sleep for about 48 hours as I recover in such a happy way, though. I mean, it's so amazing to do, but it is such a different skill set than what I use in my everyday life. Because, you know, most days I'm like, okay, time to get up. Let's go conduct a concert. Let's do this. Okay, done. But this is it's a different process. And it's a fantastic process because it really requires of the teacher to be completely non-judgmental, open, aware, and a very mindful of where you are and what's going on. And when you can get into that zone, then it becomes incredibly obvious about what it is that's going on. And then I can respond to that. But I have to get into that mindset first of like, okay, so what exactly is going on? Like I'll give you a little, for instance, with Daniel.
It's because I've been here for forever. That's why.
Yeah. That's it. So the way he was holding the baton, he kept his pointer finger kept moving back and forth. And I said, Daniel, I found the tension in your body, because it's always somewhere, right?
Sure.
You know, Dominique one day was clasping her tongue for dear life, like it was going to fall out of her face. And so I had to release her tongue and like everything, you know, it was very nice.
Yeah.
But so Daniel, like his pointer finger kept bouncing back and forth. And
was
I'm like,
making the baton shake?
A little. It was kind of moving a little bit, right? But I could see his finger. And so I was up, I was standing right next to him and I was bent, crouched down. I was looking and he's like, okay, what is it? And I'm like, your finger's moving. He's like, I don't feel it moving. I said, okay, it's still moving.
So when you get out your smartphone to video them, just to prove that
I
yes.
know. I don't do that, actually.
Okay,
I don't feel the need to prove it. I just share. I'm like, listen, I'm just sharing. I'm just showing you.
You're here. Is it hard for you not to conduct as your...
It's interesting. It's such a different skill set that I find on Monday of week two when I start conducting again that I'm like, oh. Because I just spent a whole week watching conductors so intensely. And then I'm like, oh, I remember how to do this. This is like – it's totally different from the other side. It's completely different when you're doing it as opposed to watching it.
I bet.
Yeah.
You are conducting the Beethoven Symphony Number 3. That's and remember that for those of you who would like to go see Robert Franz on the podium tomorrow at Davis, that he's going to be conducting Beethoven Symphony Number 3. That may be a trivia question to win tickets.
Good. Good. It's a very important symphony.
And what makes it so important?
So Beethoven was a student of Haydn. He was definitely from the classical period where symphonies were no longer than a half an hour. They were four movements. They were well balanced. They didn't cause any harm. They were just pleasant, lovely experiences. And something clicked in Beethoven's brain, and he, with this third symphony, he just went crazy and he just expanded it. So, first of all, the symphony is longer than most. It's 47 minutes, 47 to 50 minutes. the first two movements alone are the length of his first and second symphony, either one. So I think what happened was he had so much in his heart to express that it didn't fit into a half-hour symphony anymore, and it just expanded and expanded. And so as he was writing this piece, it was during the time of Napoleon's first sort of ascendancy to his presidency or whatever. I forget what he was called at first. He wasn't an emperor, but whatever he called himself. And
leadership.
Yes. And everybody in Europe was super excited. I mean, super excited because they're like, okay, we're getting rid of the monarchy and this guy's coming in and, you know, people, you know, representing ourselves. And Beethoven was one of them. He was very, very political. And then what happened was Napoleon named himself emperor and he became Napoleon. And so Beethoven, the symphony was originally called Bonaparte after Napoleon. And Beethoven very famously scratched out the name Bonaparte and rewrote Eroica. But the symphony has very much this grand feel. It's not only its scale, but in its size, in the sounds that it made. Sort of a funny side story is that that's the traditional story of how it got renamed, and I'm sure that was part of the deal. But it also turns out that the baron who commissioned the symphony, when he found out that Bonaparte's name was on the symphony rather than his own, was none too pleased about that fact, and so required Beethoven, in order to receive the final check of the commission, to remove the name Bonaparte from the. So there are two sides to that coin.
Money talks.
Right? It's kind of the way it is. But those two things did happen at one time.
Yeah.
So the first movement of the symphony is grand and passionate. It starts off with these two monolithic chords that the orchestra plays all together in like almost like huge Greek columns that start this piece. Yeah. The second movement is a funeral march. And while that sounds dark and heavy, if you would think sort of New Orleans kind of funeral march, you'd have more of an idea of it, especially in terms of the drama. And what I love about the second movement is that it's really the heartbeat of the entire 47-minute symphony. In this 15-minute slow movement, there is every emotion that you could possibly imagine. And it's so extreme. It's the most extreme Beethoven was in his symphonic writing up to that point. I mean, this really changed the game. It really changed things from classicism to more romantic kind of feel. The third movement is a scherzo, which is really Beethoven's invention. Beethoven took the minuets of Haydn and Mozart and he sped them up so fast that you couldn't even tell that they were a minuet anymore. And so the word scherzo literally means joke. And so while a typical minuet, ta-ta, 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 his is right, and so you couldn't possibly dance to it without hurting yourself. And then the finale is what we're going to listen to now to finish out our time together. So the finale is actually a theme that Beethoven wrote slightly earlier in his life, and he took this theme and he created a set of variations. So it's a theme and variations. But because Beethoven's Beethoven, he expanded what would normally be a 5-minute theme of variations into almost 11 minutes by adding two fugues. Now, a fugue is a place where you have one voice come in and then another one responds to it after, and then you keep adding voices one at a time, kind of like a round. Now, most composers are doing well to write one fugue. Beethoven writes two. He stops twice and does two fugues. And then you get almost to the end and you're thinking, okay, I'm exhausted and things are getting there. He stops everything. And he brings you into the most beautiful, intimate adagio section, this really slow. It's like a chorale with the winds it begins. Mm-hmm. And it's so beautiful. And it's so intimate. And it's so disarming. Like you're literally been on this journey and you're like, wow, I can hardly get over how I feel right now. And then boom, as if he just like a big baseball bat comes down and it slams on the floor and boom, you hear the ending, which is super fast, super loud, super exciting, and I mean, really takes you to the end. And so in this symphony, Beethoven didn't just play around with characters like Haydn and Mozart, although they were very characterful. Beethoven said, one character changing to another character isn't enough. It has to be one scene to another scene, one play to another play. The drama just expands in a way that is almost supernatural. And the only piece of Beethoven's that I can think of that is even more dramatic than the Third Symphony is not even the Fifth, it's the Ninth. The Ninth is where he takes it to the next degree. And the only symphony of his nine symphonies that's longer than the Third is the Ninth. The other seven symphonies are all shorter than the Third. So the Third is really – there's a very special place in the hearts of musicians and audience members, I think, for this piece. So that's a rather long-winded way of saying it's a really cool piece.
We're going to hear the finale from Beethoven's Third. Robert Franz, pleasure to have you.